Stardate 96857.99. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name's Mike Moody. With me is...
Grant Davis.
Clyde Haynes.
And...
Mariah Gossett.
Guys, we're going to talk about Season 2, Episode 12 of Star Trek Discovery, Through the Valley of Shadows.
All I want to do is sing the song.
Right?
Grant, you said you were singing earlier. Let's hear it.
Gangster's Paradise?
There you go.
The title
is strong. The song is strong.
Yeah.
Episode?
All right. Giving it up already. Hey, we have segments, man.
Okay, segments, right. Yes.
So before we jump into the episode, we're going to invite you to visit us at StarTrekPod.com. You can listen to every episode we've recorded there at StarTrekPod.com. We covered all of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. There's a pod for every single episode of Season 1. We had a few special episodes in between seasons, and then we have been covering every episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, so check that out.
Not only that, we cover them right after they come out.
Yeah. The episodes literally air, an hour before we meet at the studio. So what you're getting here on these podcasts are some...
Hot takes.
Some fresh takes. Very fresh takes.
Fresh takes!
What else can people do to support us? Grant?
Go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Plod.
Yeah, go there and then realize, oh, I typed it in wrong. Take away that L. Go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod and make a per-episode pledge. Give us $2 an episode. We usually say $1 or $2 or $3 or $5 or whatever. But just go ahead and make that $2 an episode pledge because guess what? That we got two more episodes after this. And
right.
You're going to be out $4. But guess what you're going to get in exchange for that? Exclusive access to our Slack channel as well as bonus exclusive content. Sometimes we record little Patreon minis, little episodes where we just want to talk about... Clyde slash fic that he writes for Star Trek or whatever that we want to talk about. But also that Slack channel is where we have a bunch of our listeners have joined us to be able to just chat theories and discuss just being Trekkies in general and things even outside of Trek. It's a lot of fun.
There's a big debate over whether or not we're seeing the origins of the Borg in Discovery going on the Slack channel. So if you want to dive into that, $2 an episode.
Don't get me started on whether or not it's a debate. Apparently, it's an attack.
Apparently, we got pwned.
Whatever.
Okay, let's dive into struggle is... I was going to say struggle is pointless. Because
futile?
that's in my notes.
Struggle is futile.
No. In the last episode, Leland, the bot version of Leland said... Or no, the AI told him struggle is pointless, which is just... Resistance is futile.
I'm right there with you, apparently I'm wrong, so...
All right. Through the Valley of Shadows, Season 2, Episode 12, let's talk about it. Directed by Douglas Aronofsky and written by Bo-Young Kim, Erica Lapolte. I'm going to ask, who wants to give me their hot take?
Hot take!
I don't have a hot take. I've got a lukewarm take,
right.
But it's not hot.
Sometimes we have lukewarm takes. It is a thing that happens. Bring it.
No,
tepid take.
In all fairness, I think often when you have such a great episode like we had last week that had all these elements, I was thinking about this kind of going into the episode, isn't it hard to follow that up with another really solid episode? Don't you have to build a little bit and kind of, recuperate from all the action that we had last week? So I kind of walked in thinking, all right, let's see what we got. And there's some pieces that were kind of interesting. And then some things that just kind of fell down for me. So.
Oh, man. I liked this episode. I knew it was a transitional episode, but I was in it because I knew we have to switch the plot line, right? Now we don't have the magical suit, so we're going to have to fix the problem. And we got to set it up to eventually get rid of Pike. We know that's going to happen.
Mm, yes. Yeah. You liked it, though? You liked?
I thought it moved very quickly.
Really? You like the idea of, oh, look, all the people are dead. Oh, wait, nope, there's one alive. Let's trust him and hug him. He's going to be great. This is my buddy.
I
didn't say there wasn't any flaws. I'm just saying I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, for my hot take, I was fine with this episode. I agree that coming off the energy of the last two or three episodes that we've had that have all just been extreme drama bombs. Naturally, the show needed to take a down step because they have just been recovering from the Red Angel thing. And just tonally, it made sense for them to slow things down a little bit and take a breather. And in part, I appreciated that. But I thought that the B plot with Burnham going on the mission with Spock was a little bit boring for the most part until the final battle, which was a little bit predictable. But I did really enjoy Pike hanging out with that old baby, Ash's old baby, wizard baby that was going on there in the castle. And yeah.
Our little man, Lord of the Rings moment.
The super...
so Lord of the Rings.
The really brave, like, hero moment that he has when he, you know, accepts his fate in order to make, like, a pretty monumental sacrifice. We'll get into that, but I was just kind of... I was taken by it.
I'm going to accentuate the positive in my hot take. I really loved everything happening with Pike. The idea that this episode underscored what?
I don't know. Clyde's just making,
making faces.
Okay. Don't make faces. Okay, I'm trying to make a point. The idea that this episode underscored the idea so well that he embodies the great positive values of Starfleet and of the Federation, and his legacy is something that is going to shape the future of Starfleet and the Federation. That was all laid out here when he made his choice. I thought that was great. I even liked him seeing his future. We saw that the chair that he ends up in, and Handsome Mount's acting was amazing. I thought he was really great in those scenes, and it could have felt like really generic fan service, but it was actually pretty affecting. Everything else, we're moving things along the three-dimensional chessboard to get to the finale, I guess, and it wasn't all that exciting, but there were some other cool things. The giant white baby was great. Being a Klingon Gandalf was pretty cool. I really like the rendering of the Klingon planet. The idea that they have these time crystals is nuts and pretty nuts in a good way, you know, really entertaining way. But I don't know. It was a transitional episode, mediocre episode.
So do we want to get into it?
All right. Let's.
This is a time crystal episode, so.
We're going to jump through time like we always do.
We're going to try and go linearly according to the episode, but who knows?
We're going to pull Jeremy Baramy.
We'll end up at the end. Like we'll start with the end like the baby. The big baby.
Let's Benjamin Button it. Okay.
So it kicks off with...
Amanda the hologram visiting Michael Burnham. Mommy number two now. No longer mommy number one.
Yeah, she's got mom issues, and so it's good to have mom number two come and say, hey, look.
I'm still here.
Yeah, mom number one, you know, she was all right for the first part of your life. What about the second part?
I actually thought that was a nice moment. Like, that was one of the moments where I was like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then, you know, you've got this family moment. Spot comes in, and it's like, hi. It's like, oh, warm and touching. I was like, oh, I dig it.
Mm-hmm. So the theories that are kind of running around that, what if Burnham undoes time and in a way saves her mom, and that results in her never actually having that life, that Vulcan life with them? What do you think about that? Is this like kind of foreshadowing? Like, oh, you now have these familial ties, this new family. And if anything, we erase all of it?
If anything like that happens, it's going to be at the end of the series.
I agree. Yeah. But I love it.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you've listened to our show, you know that my biggest complaint is, or I won't say complaint, the struggle that I have is I'm always looking for the reason, the why. Why have we never heard of Michael Burnham before?
Because Spock doesn't talk about his family.
Right.
Wait,
right.
Have they mentioned Cybok in this whole
show? I hear you. I'm just saying, like, as we move on, there's this whole, for me, I just struggle with this, why has he never mentioned her? So this line of thinking is that ultimately at the end of the series, she will have undone all this. That works for me.
Listen,
that is an answer.
All takes are welcome on this podcast. Not that one, but all takes are welcome. Yeah, it's fine.
So what issue do you have that, like, everything that we saw was for
just
not?
Never happened?
Yes. I mean, there are shows that have done this before. Fringe did a thing in its fourth season where it completely erased everything that happened before. But
including me watching it.
No, I thought it was a really bold move because what it did going forward was really impressive and really good. I don't know if that's going to happen here, but I don't know. The idea of spinning into another dimension with this crew, the idea of erasing everything we've already seen, it just doesn't sit well with me. They built so much up already. I just want to see new stories going forward.
Right. Yeah, I would be – I'm putting a bit of a degree of trust in the show that I like the direction they're going, and I don't think they'll try and pull the rug out from under their fans with something that seems so dastardly as that, because I do think that that in a way feels like a betrayal of the audience that has invested in – the validity of this storyline existing within their already known Trek universe. So I don't think that they would do anything like that unless they have good reason and can give a proper payoff to it.
Right. And Clyde, I do understand where you're coming from, not in terms of wanting like the soft reboot of Michael Burnham's past, or the hard reboot, really. Right. But I understand where people might think something like that is going to happen, especially in terms of Spock never mentioning Michael Burnham, because throughout this season, the show has done some canon correcting here and there. You know, we've learned why the Enterprise doesn't have holograms, and there's been other stuff where they're like, oh, by the way, that canon issue, we solved it now. So an argument can be made that they're going to address the issue that Michael Burnham was never brought up by Spock in the previous series. So
maybe she goes on a crazy secret mission and he's sworn to secrecy.
Maybe.
Who cares?
And I appreciate you clarifying that, because it's not that I want it to happen.
Okay.
I'm not saying I want them to do this hard reboot. I'm saying that if they did it, because I have this question, I would have to step back and go, okay, I allow it. Like, it would fit. But I love the characters that they've introduced into the canon. I want these characters to stay and be part of the canon going forward. I mean,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
As much as I kind of struggle with these moments and from episode to episode, I still really love this show.
I mean, now that they've introduced that they can just recast characters that you're already familiar with, I totally want them to just jump ahead in time and we see someone else play Picard or Data, and then we jump ahead again and someone plays Janeway or whoever. And
no one
just jump forward and back in time, Quantum Leap style, and we see all these other takes on these characters.
All that's fine, but there is only one Geordi LaForge. I'm just saying, don't recast it.
Just have him play it.
Mess around, have Don Cheadle playing Geordi LaForge or something. Don't do it.
Actually, I kind of want that.
No, yeah. Don't do that.
So jumping back to the episode.
A new signal.
Signal 4 is over Boreth. The most boring of planets.
Boreth.
It's actually not that boring.
Yeah, I was like, it's full of time travel crystals.
It's got time crystals and a castle and lava. It's like Darth Vader's planet.
It's got monks. It's got like
got fire and lava and gates.
Got kryptonite.
Mm-hmm. It's got flying buttresses.
True.
Was anybody else a little like, wait, they're using the spore drive again?
A little. Like, wasn't there this whole thing of like, hey, stop using the spore drive.
You're
fucking up a whole, like, system of beings.
Yeah. they use the spore drive?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It flipped in and everything. Oh, shit. Like, what happened to that whole, like...
And then Tig makes note of it when she pops back in later, because she's all like, oh,
I see you can do that again.
You've been spore hopping. What were the ethical issues there? You figured just because we pulled Culber out and he was infecting it, that they were still cool with you kind of traveling through there? I don't know.
New signal over Klingon planet Boreth.
Mm-hmm.
The questions come up again since we know it wasn't the Red Angel / Michael's mom apparently making these signals. She didn't know about them. So who is creating these signals? Burnham just cuts off Pike and asserts that they should ignore the signal and go join Giorgio and go take revenge on
That bullshit?
Cyberbot Leland.
Burnham's been throwing out theories left and right, and now she's all of a sudden like, hey.
It's not logical.
Shut up, Pike, about your theories. And I'm like, I want to hear what Pike's theory was. I was missing out on that.
Yeah, he wants to focus on the new mission to figure out what these signals mean. And it seems like everybody's down
with that. Well, that's their original mission that they got from the Admiral. Like, they still haven't actually completed that.
That's why he's on the Discovery.
Is to explore the signals.
But, like, Burnham seems like kind of all over the place anyway as well. She was like, well, no, we also need to go chase after Leland. And Saru had to be like drop logic on her and be like, really? We have the one thing on our ship
that he wants,
and you want to go after him? And then she still does it, which just seems...
Well, she doesn't go after Leland's ship. She still goes to investigate
Section 31.
A ship that didn't check in when it was supposed to, because Tyler gets an alert that's just like, oh, a ship has gone missing.
But she is fueled by this rage to find Leland and take revenge on him, even though it's not really Leland.
Even though he's a shapeshifter and could just shift into looking like her and take over her body. It's a Skrull War thing going on here.
Yeah, it is a Skrull War thing. She's just angry that she lost her mother to this threat, which is the AI control. And she wants to go in its direction and just crush it.
Well, and she's also frustrated because she had a role to play in it, right? Like, if she listened to her mother and just did what she had asked her instead of doing the whole, wait, no, we can save you, then it would have worked out a little bit better. But so I think it's some internal guilt that she's dealing with, and she's lashing out at
Burnham with burden.
Yeah. I mean, that would be shockingly new, refreshing for this character. And then I think she's taking it out on Leland and obsessing over this, and only to realize...
Taking it out on Pike a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, any other captain would have been like, excuse you? Pike is awfully patient. Like, he's real patient.
He understands that she's going through some shit.
Yeah.
Every episode. Well, yeah. Like, damn.
Yes. Multiple layers of the shit.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. So when at first, like, Tyler's like, I'm going to go chat with my ex and find out if we can go onto this planet. She's and she like, gave what? Him that look. And I was like, ooh, somebody's jelly.
Yeah.
But that scene with them in the room.
I know. It got really, like, intimate and kind of nice between the two of them again.
Yeah, like, they both, like, emotionally support each other.
It was fantastic.
It was nice of him to be like, you don't need any more Burnham. Any more burden, Burnham.
Right.
I was like, yes, finally someone telling this lady.
Well, it was great because they have such an intimate connection still, and it transcends, sexual attraction to where they can have this moment where he lets her in and says, I had a son with Laurel. We hid him on this planet that, by the way, has all the time crystals that we have to go to. Hey, what a fun plot. And she comforts him in that moment.
So I thought it was a great moment. I really thought it was a touching moment. I just, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, let me get this straight. So, this guy has just told this black woman that he's got a baby with his ex, and he's known and has not told her about it, and now they've got to go visit the baby. And she was like, you know, I just wish I could have shared this. I was like, I don't know that quite would have been her reaction. I think she would have been a little upset for a second. But
she was raised by Vulcans.
But she has not been acting very Vulcan in these last episodes.
I got to raise my hand and say there's definitely some spin you're putting on that.
I was just watching it and going, I'm just thinking in any other situation, a guy comes to a woman and says, by the way, but I got a baby. I just found out.
Well,
I didn't tell you.
There's a little more. By the way, I was a secret Klingon, and everybody on my planet wanted to kill me and my baby, so I had to hide him.
And that when I was a secret Klingon is when I actually conceived the baby.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even... It was when he was still a Klingon, not even when he was a weird half and half.
I'm just saying, you get... he could have told her those things before this moment. The whole point is...
But he was protecting the baby.
Yeah, but you need to confess before you get caught. That's all I'm saying.
He was technically confessing before he gets caught because they had not been to the planet
true.
Yet.
That is
Burrell
true.
Hadn't been on the ship.
There you go.
Because that would have been a whole nother thing.
Because it would have been way worse if it was with Laurel in yeah. the room.
Laurel's like, we like have it, a baby.
Like it was with Pike.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that man. Argument was so good.
It was so great because... Like, Pike's like, hey, guys, I really want to get my hands on some time crystals. And they're like, we got some other shit we got to work out
Stop.
Real quick.
We're going to have like, a little squabble over here.
He's like, yeah, but time crystals, right? And they're like, permission to speak freely.
Stop.
Yeah, yeah, whatever you guys say. Klingon baby drama ensues.
And oh, it's shit. His.
In Klingon, yeah.
He's like, I just want my time crystals.
So... Pike bravely decides he's going to go down to the planet and nab these time crystals. And then we jump to Saru, allowing Burnham to take the ship and follow the missing Section 31 ship. Okay.
Being all like, I'm a new captain now.
Yeah.
Swag Saru.
And like, also like, cool. You know, whoever put that signal up by my planet led to me being the new Saru. And when I find out, I'm going to thank them. I wonder why they did that.
Chill as fuck, Saru.
Right?
I was like, he's about to light up a spliff and be like, shit, just do what you want. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
I'm going to sit in this captain's chair and have a grand old time.
Yeah. Sipping on some Grand Marnier, talking about, just do you, baby. Just do you.
But, I mean, when he... I mean, the writers just telegraph so much here when Saru's like, you know... This is all because of the person who, whoever lit that red signal above my planet. Now I can be chill Saru. I got to thank them.
I mean, we know
it's going to be Michael Burnham.
Yeah, we know right. the person's
yeah.
Burnham.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
We're just going to frost this nice little Easter egg right over here for you.
Yeah.
Dip it in chocolate.
So Burnham set up these dots in order to kind of...
lead them in the right way to destroy control.
And eventually they're going to have to try and spend all of next season going into the future to try and save her. Because she's going to be trapped in time sending out these signals to them.
All right. It's not lost. It is not lost.
No,
no, they're all going to end up on the Enterprise with Pike next season.
And Lorca.
Pike is Lorca, guys.
Oh, my dun, dun, God. Dun.
All right. The Klingon snow planet is dope.
It is.
It, it is. I was dope. Just like, I was waiting for the Game of Thrones theme song to come on. And then as soon as we got to like the lava thing, I was like, oh no, now it's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that cloak was hot though, right? Like, just
oh the... yeah, with the little foop.
God, all these Klingons, man, look
great
fucking
dreads.
Cool. They looked great. I was like, these are the best looking Klingons this show has had. They're all different looking. Some of them have facial hair.
They
some
all
of them
seem
have
to
different
be blue.
Robes. Some of them are... white, some of them, well, there was only one white one, right? Some of them are blue, yeah. But they look great.
Colors,
yeah.
I thought it was interesting, one thing I've noticed is that when we see these Klingons, they're always, like, surrounded by light. Like, there's always enough lighting. Where I felt like if you go back to, like, TNG, right? It's like, they're always, it's like, just...
In the shadows.
In the shadows, let's take the light bulbs out of every room. Like, it's just like, it's gray and dark in every room. And this is like, we can see fully what they look like and how they move. It's kind
of
nice.
Yeah, they're proud of that makeup.
Jab makeup
this
department.
Time.
And then Pike rolls in right out of his Eddie Bauer like photo shoot.
In his Patagonia jacket.
Yeah. Just looking like a hot daddy in there. I'm like, all right, nice jacket.
Here's when you know it was a little too much. As I'm watching and I'm going... Yo, that jacket is kind of hot, man.
Mm-hmm.
It took me out for a moment because I was like,
"Are they gonna sell that jacket in the fan store?"
I was like, "Yo, I don't know who the costume designer is, but dang, you did it! Like that was a shot one right
Where's
there.
Where's the price tag? Where did I get one of those?"
Yeah, we need that app where you're watching TV and it shows you where to buy everything that's on.
Not on this show. Could you imagine the people walking around in Star Trek like costumes? It would just be a mess.
It would be us.
It would be us.
We'd all be in here right now wearing those jackets.
Just not a red shirt. Just no red shirts.
Mm-mm.
And Pike's going to test his might against whatever time crystal thing.
Yeah.
I know. I felt like adult baby was basically telling him, you're going to see things you do not want to see. And I was like, well, we all kind of know what he's going to see.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
You didn't know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I thought testing your might, he was like, you're going to see some shit. I was like, oh, I bet he's going to do one of those American Gladiator things that they do in that other movie or other Trek one. What's, you know, where they got the little paddle javelin things and they're hitting each other?
Oh, yeah. No, they didn't do that.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of a little with Grant in the fact that I thought that, you know, old baby really
I wrote his name down somewhere.
Tenovic.
I mean, I thought Tenovic really oversold, like, many have entered, very few have left, and this is going to be the test of your life. And
well, then, very few have left with a crystal.
Yes.
They left.
No one has left with a crystal. Yeah. Everyone's left mad. You're not going to make it. And then it was like, this is the present. Oh, cool. Let's keep going. This is, like, I was just like, that's it? Like,
that was a little silly.
I was thinking, there's no, like, you know, no battle, no nothing. Yeah, like a task, a challenge, a puzzle, yeah. Something.
Also, what's up with the set looking like we suddenly were on like Stargate or something?
Yeah.
I was like, hey, everything else looks so cool, but this room with all these crystals on the walls looks a little hokey to me.
I was expecting something a little bit more challenging, like a battle by, I mean, they're Klingons, right? Some combat or something.
But they're a monastery. They're monks.
I mean, yeah, but when he tried to take a step forward, true. They were like, I'll cut your head off. Like, it was...
True. But this was supposed to be a different Klingon experience, right? Like, these guys just guard this stuff. They don't go out and battle. So it was supposed to be a little different. I'm a Klingon apologist.
I did write down at this point, the plot is hustling. Like,
fuck
we're
yes.
already, like, Spock is moving. On this mission Man. With Burnham. Pike is already on the planet. Yeah. We've already encountered some Klingons. We found out about the baby. I was like, we are only on the second commercial break.
Right. Jet Reno is sassing some people.
Well, that's right after that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was. You're right. The plot was hustling.
I'm jumping ahead of myself.
Then here. We get cafeteria with Reno.
Put the crystal down, Grant.
But I guess we go back to Spock, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So...
Spock's like,
back
I'm
on the shuttle with
brother.
Burnham and Spock, yeah.
Yeah. All I wrote down was that he has a good, deep voice.
He does.
I was very impressed.
Is it weird that this is a super sexy Spock? When Leonard Nimoy's original Spock, I think like a bunch of nerds...
You didn't think Leonard Nimoy was sexy?
I did, but in a different way.
Very different way.
Because he was more of a
like
fucking,
a gentleman and a scholar.
He was more of a...
Dork.
Dork, geeky, weird, strange person.
I never thought he was sexy.
No?
No.
All right. It's a problem.
Look, I'm not going with Mike in that, but I will say this Spock, I did find myself, as a guy with a beard, I found myself going, yo, his beard is like, it's nice, it's shaped. I was just like, wow, it's well
I do
done.
Think it's a little high on the cheeks, though. I
you
feel
think?
Like they could bring it down just a little bit.
Yeah, the beard wants to blind him. It's like
it
going
does.
Up and trying
to
gouge his
eyes
out.
Like is that like a costume choice, though, for like the pointy ears,
maybe.
Like pointy beard?
Yeah.
If he shapes that thing up, though, it's going to be super distracting because he's going to look, he's going to be like,
they're probably like, we got to nerd him up.
We got to nerd him up or something. He's got to be, we got to Vulcan him up just a little bit because if we shape it up, it's going to be too pretty.
Well, Burnham doesn't. Again, she's like, these signals are bullshit. We got to go after control. We got to figure it out. Spock is saying the signals have something to do with Burnham. Burnham doesn't want to look for meaning in the signal. She's angry. She's looking for a fight. She's full of rage. Spock says rage is the enemy of logic. All right.
Yeah.
Some good Spocking happening.
You not feeling it?
Not feeling
no,
it.
No.
No.
Dialogue didn't work for you?
No. I mean, this is where they find all the dead bodies. Section 31.
We haven't hit that point yet, guys.
No?
No, we're at the cafeteria with Reno.
I got to tell Mike to put down
his time crystal. Now, the most jarring scene of this entire episode happens where we see people laughing and like eating and like everyone's around the table having a great time. I'm like, totally, this is just weird for the rest of this season.
Yeah, because we went from like brother-sister squabble, fine, you're on my ship. Uh-huh. And then it's like cut to cafeteria games.
Oh, not everyone on this ship is wearing the weight of the world on their shoulders. That's good.
Yeah, the whole B-list crew with Linus is just goofing off. What was the name of the game they were playing?
Whatever the name of that.
Auto-antonym.
Yes. Auto-antonym game.
Yeah. Linus is pretty great, even though he belongs on the Orville.
He's a sassy bitch, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's great for comedic relief, I guess.
Like, yeah.
I was really happy, obviously, to see Tig back as Jet Reno doing some healing between Culber and Stamets here.
So is she the other new resident therapist, basically. Like, maybe not therapist, but she's like, she's an engineer, not just of the ship, but also of people's emotion of the heart. Yes. Right.
Well, I think we found out more about her. She had a wife who passed away, and she sees what Kolber and Stamets had or could have and knows how important it can be to them and wants to help them get back together, potentially.
Well, I like that she uses a degree of kind of tough love with Stamets, because that seems to be a little bit more in the mode of language that she recognizes he speaks in already. Mm-hmm. That so she likes to just kind of razz him a little bit and like say, hey, shake it off, get over it, move on. Whereas with Kolber, she has a lot more of a gentle touch. Like, she tries to find a common emotional ground. And it was very telling, I thought, that Kolber acts like a bit of a robot who seems like he doesn't understand how he's in this body of his, and this isn't his life, and this isn't his family.
Yeah, and then she's just like, but here's all the things you remember from,
exactly,
like, your wedding and, like, all of the details.
How quickly he was able to kind of just jump into, like, these are all the things that frustrated me and I still found endearing about my relationship with him. And it's like, it's more like he's an amnesiac than he is, mm-hmm, a stranger in his body,
or
right?
He just needs
kind of a trigger for those emotions to kind of remember what it was that he loved about Stamets.
Very intuitive of Reno to pick up on that and to try and jog his memory and his heart in that way. I like that.
I thought that it was done in a really, I don't want to say slick is a great word, but I don't like the connotation. It was clever, mm-hmm, right? Because I felt like when you look at Stamets wants to be like, well, don't you remember this? And don't you remember this? And don't you remember this? And he's like, back
off.
Right. And this was just like, oh, I remember this. Well, I remember this. And it was so natural that you're like, oh, it is in there. Mm-hmm. Okay. You got some love in there, buddy.
Mm-hmm. She's connecting those memories to specific emotions. And that really helps bring it out for him. Where Stamets is like, why don't you remember this? Why don't you love me? You know, yeah, it's different.
And I thought adult baby was the wizard. Jet Reno's the real wizard.
Yeah. Jet Reno spinoff.
Maybe Jet Reno's in Section 31 or on the Picard spinoff, maybe.
Ooh.
Jet Reno 911. That's what I want to see.
There it is.
With vegan steak.
Perfect.
Okay. What's the next scene? I'm lost.
We're jumping back
down. We're in space, right?
No, we're jumping back to the planet where we find out that there's grown baby man.
Yeah, grown baby man and the immediately growing trees.
Oh,
the,
yes.
That was a cool effect.
That was a cool effect.
Hey, guys, explain how time crystals work for me. Go.
They need a power source. Supernova, yeah. A planet needs to go supernova.
You're actually trying this. Okay.
I mean, and then stuff happens.
Needs some kind of a hookup to plan a destination. So some sort of computer, I'm assuming.
And whichever time crystal you break apart into your hand seals your personal fate, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although
they're magical, mystical, scientific Star Trek things.
We've proved that otherwise. Time is pretty fluid, and you can change all sorts of futures, but not if you break that crystal into your hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once you touch the crystal, it's locked in. You're done.
Done and done.
So yeah, that's a fact.
And then we jump back. We jumped all over the place this episode. Then we jump back to Spock and Burnham on the ship, getting ready to drop out of warp.
And this is where they find the dead bodies.
They hit all the bodies.
Cameron Gant, I think his name was.
Gant. Yeah. For a second there, I thought he was the douche bro that beamed on board with Pike at the beginning of this season. I was like, not this guy again, because he looked familiar. But no, he's the guy that we lost in the Shenzhou in the premiere episode of season one.
But which was a cool little callback, and kudos to that actor for getting to jump back in here for a bigger role, because this was a fun one for him, I would imagine. It was pretty fun for me to watch.
I mean, more fun than not having any lines and no one remembering you from the pilot.
Yeah, right?
It has to be more fun.
I bet there's more pay.
He wasn't the guy who was like, fasten your seatbelts and tray tables. Was he that guy?
Maybe.
That
no
him?
Idea.
I mean, that's impressive if you remembered that one line.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it was so bad. And it made me think, fuck, I started a podcast about this show. This is going to be bad. But then it got better.
It did.
Yeah, so they pick up this dude's body, And they're like, oh, we revived you. Hey.
We need to go back on this ship punched you out.
Bastard. We're not good at recognizing and being delicate about people's trauma. So usually when we see someone has trauma, we're like, tough shit.
Just throw it to the back of the bus. We're going right back where you came
back
from.
Back to the wolves, yeah.
This is a shuttle. There's obviously no counselor here, so get off your ass.
Right.
Get ready.
And hey, I know we just saw you after a long time and you seem like you were dead, but we're going to trust you completely, wholly.
What looks like any scans on your body.
No. We're just going to trust you because you seem safe.
So we're back with Laurel and Tyler. We get more of this theme of duality or this binary theme where Laurel asserts that she can be a mother and a chancellor, even though she's just a chancellor because she gave up her baby, but that's fine.
Why you gotta bring up old shit? That was so like four episodes
ago. She can still think like a mom.
Because it's the real shit.
I mean, once you're a mom, you're a mom, right? Mm-hmm. You feel it. She still has love for the baby.
I thought that the scene showed that they got a degree of closure that was more important that they were lacking before. They kind of left with a bit of a dramatic rift and the faking of deaths and running and hiding. And this way they got to kind of address, like, you know, I had feelings for a person that you no longer are, and I recognize that, and I recognize and accept that you've moved on in this other direction, but I also can respect that, like, you know, Vok Ash, whatever you are now, Ash, you're going to protect our 80-year-old son.
it was a scene that needed to happen between them, and it was so economical of a scene. It went by so quickly. And Mariah, I'm with you. Some of the scenes here were like so fast paced. Mm-hmm. Everything's going by so quickly. But with this, I was happy that they just got in, took care of that emotional moment, put some distance between these characters, and they got out.
I thought this was one of the best scenes in the episode, mainly because to both of your points, it was economical. There wasn't a whole lot of wasted space. But also, I think not only did they need to have that, I think we needed it, mm-hmm. right? Because it provided closure to us, like, okay.
None of these are evil characters anymore.
Right,
you know?
And he's not still, because I felt like we were left not quite understanding what that relationship between Laurel and Vok Ash really was, and now we know that it's closed, right? Like, it's over, and that she sees that, and he you know, he's admitted to it. I just thought it was nice to kind of tie that off and we can completely move on. I think what it's geared to do is allow us to trust Ash a little bit more, though I think that ship has sailed a little bit. They're trying really hard to bring him back in to this place where we all trust him and root for him and cheer him on.
Discovery welcomed him back on. Apparently he's part of the crew again, now that Section 31 is MIA.
He's dating Burnham again. Like, there's a lot. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm alone in this. I'm just not ready to be like, yeah, Ash, I'm Team Ash. I'm not ready to go there yet.
We need another moment between him and Colbert where Colbert goes, you're all right in my book, even though you murdered me.
that actually might do it for me. Like, if I saw their relationship growing and being more authentic, right now he's this dude who hangs out in a room and pops up on the bridge.
He hasn't earned our acceptance because we haven't seen a scene of their acceptance.
Yeah, and I think also he still is not quite a full character to me yet, right? Like, he's not really doing his own thing. He continues to serve other characters, whether it's Pike or whether it's Burnham.
He's always the foil. Yeah,
yeah, but he doesn't have he's not carrying his own weight.
And he still sort of feels temporary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think once that happens, I'll kind of move into being like, yeah, and then they'll ship him off to another show and I'll be like, ah.
That's probably what's going to happen, yeah.
You'll get attached, so then you actually want to watch the other show.
As a quick aside, Laurel's dress. Did you guys see that?
So mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
I mean, costume designer like on this with a jacket for Pike and then this thing. I'm like,
And don't forget, like I said, that cloak for Big Baby.
Big Baby's cloak. All of it.
Yeah.
Really cool.
The ring on his ridges was really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're back with Giant Baby on the crystal planet. And Pike touches the time crystal.
They straight up say some line here that's I don't remember what the line was, but
my duty is to...
You know, when you go in this, they're going to have this personal test when you go into this cave thing. That was like straight out of like Yoda talking about the Jedi cave, right? And was it like the same thing?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. That's what I thought. I didn't remember what the
line
was.
This is a Star Trek podcast.
I was going to say the same thing. We don't talk about
same universe, right?
Star W on a Star Trek podcast. We don't do that.
Oh, I don't get this, but okay, fair enough.
So you were telling me that you didn't really know that what Pike saw, that didn't really make sense to you, right? You don't know about the history of Pike?
I kind of knew that he dies at some point, but I thought there was something weird about him, his head.
We actually don't see him die ever in Star Trek lore.
But I didn't know that he was badly burned and then he lived like a worm with his head poking out of like some weird black tomb thing.
This was from like the menagerie, right?
Yes.
The pilot episode, the unaired pilot episode of the original series. Right?
That's The Cage. Then the sequel to The Cage that came later is The Menagerie. And that is where we see Pike rolled in to the episode in this floating wheelchair. And he can't communicate. And he is just a burnt body, a burnt head. Yeah.
Did we know how he became a burnt body before?
We never saw it. And I think there was a throwaway line in The Menagerie about him being, victim of some attack. And I think that's all we get. So when I saw what was happening here, I realized, oh, they're actually showing us the attack. It was pretty compelling to me, like, just as a fan. I just recently watched The Cage and The Menagerie, so I'm really into what's happening with Pike now, and I thought it was great.
You finally get like a fully fleshed out Pike. It's not just like this lore of like, oh, he was the captain before Kirk, you know, like.
And it's crazy because the season's not even over yet. We've only had 12 episodes of Pike, but he, and I think a lot of Star Trek fans can say this already, he is like one of the top favorite captains in the entire Trek lore. I mean, aren't you guys loving him?
He's my favorite so far of all one show I've seen.
Right.
So.
There's something inside of me that refuses to say top unless you say outside of Jean-Luc Picard.
One of the top.
One of the top.
I'm just saying you got to make that distinction.
Is he better than Archer?
Yes.
Will you stop bringing up Enterprise of the show, man?
I feel like you guys hate it. But I think maybe.
This scene really plays back to when the Admiral is just like, you are the mold. You're what we're trying to like be as the Federation. Right. You know, like you are the reason. You're very important.
I'm curious, Grant. So I think for us who knew what was going to happen, when he had to make this decision of do I take hold of this and lock in my future? Were you at all curious? Did you think that he might not take the crystal?
No. Okay. And I was pretty aware that this is kind of the scenes that you guys were familiar with, at least some kind of new updated take on the scenes you were familiar with, except for the, like, does his face, like, melt at some point in that one scene?
I think that was just, like, his mind really cementing, like, you are not you anymore.
Time tripping right
there.
Yeah. A little bit.
It felt very, like, my mind is now, like, going to the worst place, you know?
Okay. It makes sense on a few different levels because when we do see him after this accident in the original series, he's actually played by a different actor than that played him in the pilot. So he looks different, but they do obscure his face, and it looks scarred and melted.
Okay.
So, yeah, it wasn't this grotesque
right, as
we saw now, but it is.
The makeup is a lot more high-tech now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I get that him kind of accepting his fate. I guess my question to you guys is, in the original series, were you guys aware that he knew his fate?
Like,
no.
That's brand new. That's brand new.
And how does that alter anything for you guys as far as your perception of him?
It doesn't for me. Actually,
I mean, it's a noble.
What
move,
it does
right?
is
really cements it in a way.
It cements how noble he is. It cements that it makes perfect sense that Starfleet and the Federation would move into this even more altruistic territory that we know it to be based on his legend, based on his example.
I mean, I'm with you all the way. And that brings me to the question, Mike. So I know you had some concerns about some of the other dialogue. When he's laying there and he's like, service, sacrifice, compassion, love. You love that.
I was in. Yeah.
It felt like he was just verbalizing his internal monologue in a way, and it kind of felt right in
Shakespearean.
That, well, in the way that he was just like, his brain was just not a safe space. He just saw his own death, and so he's like verbalizing all of the things to like reaffirm, like,
yeah,
when you're just like, I am gonna have a good day, you take yourself in the mirror, but he's like, I am all of these things, and I'm gonna take this
I'm
crystal.
Good enough, I'm smart enough, god damn it, this Klingon baby likes me.
That might be my favorite Pike moment.
All right.
Mainly because, I mean, I can see it, like, you're having this kind of conflict inside of you, and you were voicing, this is who I am, mm-hmm. right? And this is what I believe, and I'm going to make the decision based on who I am and what I believe, not how I feel. And I was like, wow, that is an inspiring captain right there. Mm-hmm.
They are so setting up Handsome Mount for his own show.
God, I
if
hope
they're
so.
They're not, yeah. They should be, yeah.
I mean, come on.
I mean, that there's so much, I guess, material there if you went back and said, we're going to do a show about Pike before all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean,
they say it can't work, but Better Call Saul proves you can. Get good writers.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think if you had that and you lock in Handsome Mount, I mean, that's gold.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Saul Goodman, you better call Jesse Pinkman because magnets, bitch. Apparently magnets can kill the nanites.
I think it just locked them into place. I didn't think it actually killed them.
Whatever.
Anyway.
It killed
okay,
them.
You know what was the biggest bullshit about that whole scene?
Bring it.
Okay, Gant, whatever. Yeah, Gant, nanobot, evil mm-hmm. dude. He has Burnham in his sights. And he even says this kind of cool line where he's like, I can be over there in 0.8 seconds and tear out your throat or whatever. Mm-hmm. He says, like, don't even try and reach for that gun. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. And then he kind of wobbles on over to her and like starts chatting with her. And all it takes is Spock talking into the overhead speaker, and like a 3-year-old kid, he looks at the speaker like he's looking at the radio or a TV. Like, you don't need to look at the speaker to hear the audio.
Well, I think he was looking like, to see if Spock was in the room yet.
Oh, I don't know.
That's what I got.
It felt like he looks up right at like the speaker in the corner of the wall and goes, huh? She's like, oh, sweet, a distraction. Pew, pew, pew.
I thought you were going to go somewhere else, and I agree with you. But I had some concern when Burnham's laying on the ground or on the bulkhead.
Like, why aren't you running away from
that's
the piano
what I was
thing?
I was thinking, is her
classic horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Are her legs broken? Because she's just laying there shooting, and I'm thinking, you should be running in the opposite direction as fast as possible.
You know, in this scene, we get so many, I'm going to say it, Borg signifiers. Nanites, this guy wanting to inject nanites.
This guy's with me.
I mean,
into the eye, which is always like, they always got something around their eyeball.
Yeah. I don't know what this Borg thing is, but I'm with you guys. I think it's totally the Borg.
Listen, I'm not saying it's a Borg. I'm not saying I want it to be the Borg, but there are so many
it
signifiers here.
It would make sense, though, right?
Yes, yeah. I just hoped it, yeah.
There's no reason it can't be.
No.
Well, okay, so are you guys, you don't want it to be the Borg?
I mean, okay, if it is the Borg, that's fine, but give me a really good story. Don't just reuse the Borg as the space zombies again.
No, so the Borg are supposed to be old, a little bit older than this, right? So they would have to somehow take and shoot Leland back into the past to like
quadrant.
Kind of
yeah. I'm just saying,
this.
It could be the Borg origin story.
But yeah, but
when you
Borg,
have a ship like the Discovery that can jump wherever
older.
And go back in time.
Thank you, Grant.
They could just jump back and then like,
maybe they started
to
in the Alpha Quadrant when they were really just becoming, you know, this, you know, control AI. And then next thing you know, they, you know, somersault flipped, spore drive yeah. into the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
And was left there.
The finale is going to shoot them back in time with him on ship. They kick him out the window, and then they shoot ahead in time and blow up the thing in Super Future. They blow up the Discovery in Super Future space.
Yeah, could be all this stuff.
I need a time crystal to decipher what Grant just said.
I don't know what I said. I'm tired.
So, yeah, I mean, the control is even assimilating ships mm-hmm. like the Borg does.
And he's a super nanobite robot, and Burnham's able to hold off his little eye ice pick thing with her arms for a good while.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, she trains. I've seen her in the gym.
Didn't that guy just like, didn't he push people and they like shot across the room in the last episode when Leland was
we're
like,
talking
nanobot?
About Burnham. She lifts weights, man.
Also, okay, this is a smaller guy.
She's super swole. I get it.
Maybe there's only so much you can do with the carbon body that you're in as these little nanobites.
Yeah.
I was a little confused by the idea that this nanite guy wanted to kill and reconstruct Burnham. I get why he wanted to do it. He
sounded like a great idea to me.
Okay. He wanted to replace her on Discovery so he can get access to the spear data, which is what Control needs to do its evil Control thing. But then he even tells her that. And then they get rid of him with a magnet. And and then later on, Spock and Burnham have this whole deal of like, hey, they were after you. They're afraid of you. You're the thing that can stop them. But I was like, well, a few minutes before, we were told that the reason they were after her was just so they could impersonate her and get the data, not that she's such a threat. So I don't know.
I thought the same thing, Mike, and I was thinking, couldn't they impersonate Spock? Wouldn't Spock be a
or
great
anyone who's or on
really
the Discovery?
Anyone?
Right, yeah.
I mean, if it were me, I'd probably impersonate Tilly because she's probably the one who's least likely to, you know, hold off that ice pick in the eye thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything about Tilly, but, you know,
she
I don't
has
know.
Too much human emotion.
Not a lot of Tilly. I don't remember seeing Tilly tonight.
I didn't see any Tilly.
Yeah.
No.
Tilly.
Yeah.
I thought we were supposed to get Grant, you said Tilly's hair is going to come to life and eat everybody.
If you guys go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod and make a $2 per episode donation, you can join the discussions group where I might throw out some theories that I'm going to try and pitch. Oh, wait. Did I do that one on Twitter?
I think it was on
okay,
Twitter.
Okay. I threw out some other theories.
You threw out more
Slack
on the Slack.
Yeah. But those ones were a little bit more feasible than the evil hair.
I agree. So we're back on the disco. We now have a raw time crystal. Pike is a little bit shaken. Stamets and Reno are on the job working the crystal, trying to figure out how to make it work. Pike says he spoke to the big baby son.
Did he look grayer?
Yeah.
I think he looked like
so.
He had lived a few lives when he got back on that ship.
That's
totally.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't notice that.
We get a nice moment where Pike gives the torchbearer insignia back to Tyler. Laurel and Tyler feel good about their son.
He has a name.
Yeah.
And we also
that
get...
That sounds like a good name.
It's a good
That's
name.
A good name.
Pitch perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. I was working on it.
There was that bullshit, though, where they're like, oh, please tell us anything about our son. And he's like, I don't think I can do that. It won't make sense. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? You could have given him a throwaway line. Or at least say, I'll tell you later off camera because we need to get on with some other stuff that's more pertinent.
He could have just, I mean...
That's their son.
As they're walking away, it could have just been like, I'm happy to tell you all about it. Pat on the back, walk out
Anything,
the door.
Right?
He just didn't think it was that complicated. I mean...
They're on a weird time planet. He's older now. I don't know.
Tenzin explained it in one line. Time here works differently. The future is the future. This is the past. The present is everything. Like, that would have been it. Like, okay. He was 45 years old. Got it.
Was the baby played by Sylvester Stallone?
Maybe.
I was like, Vin Diesel? We're all family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more Vin Diesel, isn't it? Give me a Corona. Yes. So, and then they're like, hey, well, what happened to you? Pike's like, that's for me to know. That's mine.
Bro, this is mine.
That's mine.
Step
That's for
up,
me.
Bro.
Yeah.
He doesn't share his burdens unlike everyone else on this ship.
Yeah, that's right.
He's balanced.
So we end with Burnham and Spock back on the disco talking about, talking about basically how Section 31 has been assimilated by the not Borg.
it's the Borg.
I like that, not Borg.
Yeah, yeah,
we'll
yeah.
Just call them
bisection
and then
Borg.
30 ships show up to apparently attack Discovery.
Well, is it called Section 31 because there's 31 ships?
I wrote down this. If it's because they have 31 ships, this is either brilliant or just dumb.
Well, it can't be that because they just abandoned another ship and Leland has another ship, unless Leland
so
is with all those ships.
32 ships?
Yeah.
Section Maybe they 32? Fixed the one that they abandoned.
Oh boy!
I don't know.
Ooh.
But I like what they did with the cliffhanger of this episode.
We're gonna have to blow up the ship, guys.
Blowing up the ship. I'm like, wasn't that kind of what you guys should have decided when you're like, oh, we have the one thing that that control needs, is that sphere data on this ship. And if we can't wipe the data somehow from this ship without destroying the ship, yeah, destroy the ship, guys. And get rid of your evil time-traveling paradox world universe destroying.
Right.
Yeah, ship anyway.
Pike calls the Enterprise. It's get here fast. We're going to need to hitch a ride. And it ends. And I don't think this is going to happen, but I would love the big twist at the end of the season would be for all of my favorite characters to join Pike and the Enterprise, and that's the show.
I think all of the Enterprise people will get onto the Enterprise, and then Discovery is going to jump somewhere where they didn't think they were supposed to. They didn't know they were going to be there, and then they're stuck.
Okay.
Lost in time?
I just think we're going to see Burger Girl again.
Burger Girl?
When she came onto the Discovery to eat a burger with a Pike.
Number one?
Yes, number one.
Oh, yeah.
We're definitely getting her next episode.
Yeah, she's going to be there.
More Tig, more Rebecca Romijn, more Linus, please.
I don't know that we're getting more Tig. I mean, Tig shows up like once an episode, and then we don't see it for like eight.
Yeah. I think we are, just because they really set it up that Reno and Stamets are figuring out how to use this time crystal.
Hope so.
Do you think they'll actually destroy the ship?
Probably
no.
Not.
No.
Not yet.
No. The show is called Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, they can make a new like Discovery Junior ship, and they all hop on that.
The sets have already been made. Yeah. They're not going to remake that.
I'm going to do something that I know we're not supposed to do. But if you've seen the short Trek, you know in Calypso, the ship's alive, like thousands of years later.
But that's where they jump it into the future and leave it there.
Maybe.
That could happen.
Someone on our chat, I think it was Karen, mentioned that the voice that talks to Leland right before it darts him in the eye, potentially control, sounds an awful lot like the voice of the lady robot controlling the ship Discovery
Arium?
In the future.
Arium?
No. The thing that's just that like punches him in the eye.
Oh, that it sounds like the
Calypso ship.
The Calypso.
Yeah. I
thought it was
theory.
A male voice and then a female voice, but they did both have a British accent, so I don't know if it just changed.
Yeah, you just say Siri, switch the voice to a female version, and I think you're fine.
Yeah.
You know.
Theories galore. We have two more episodes left. Well, this is. Are we excited about seeing these last two episodes?
More than this episode.
Okay, yes.
I mean,
this was not a placeholder episode, but this was
just
transitional. Yeah.
I mean, you know, not to put any pressure on writers who probably don't listen to the podcast and who could care less about what I think. But it's the penultimate episode, right, for the season. So expectations,
next week,
my expectations are going to be a little bit high that it's going to be. I mean, and first of all, I'm already intrigued. You're talking about 30 or 31 ships versus Discovery. Hello, that's going to be fun to watch.
And the Enterprise. Because it's on its way.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm expecting this next episode to be incredible.
I'm excited I'm assuming we're going to see the inside of the Enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen a little bit of it before, but I watched the
Give
preview.
Me the bridge.
I watched the preview. They're on the bridge.
Remember when they had Stamets go Super Saiyan in the mycelial network to like jump all around that planet at different points? Mm-hmm. What if they do that same thing, but they're just jumping all around the battlefield, shooting and like sniping
but that,
everyone?
That like almost killed him.
Hey, sacrifice yourself for the galaxy, baby.
What do we say about that? Stamets, heart, soul of the show? No.
The mycelial network will just make another duplicate of him.
That could happen.
Add that to your relationship problems, Stamets.
You're both back from the dead.
Yeah, just open up
zombies.
A rift into the network, peeing
I get you. I get you. I've been there.
That's how their relationship's going to get repaired.
And now we're good. All right, visit us at StarTrekPod.com. You can find links to our Twitter there, our Facebook. More importantly, you can subscribe to the show there on Apple, on Spotify, everywhere you get podcasts. Leave us a review on one of those. I think the most important place to leave us a review is on Apple Podcasts. So please do that. 5 stars. We do have a bunch of reviews we need to get to and talk about, but we'll do that never. These episodes are too long. We'll do it next week. All right, we'll do it next week. All right, guys, anything else you want to say about this episode?
Are we still doing awards? Is that a thing we're doing anymore?
Oh, we're doing awards.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot.
I wrote some down.
And
I have
nominations.
We have not made a consensus yet.
Oh. Do you want to do that? You want to take a quick break and we'll do it?
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to see who is the MVP of this episode in terms of actor, in terms of the production. We'll be right back. And we're back. We've reached a consensus. And we
it's like no time passed at all.
We have the time crystals.
Yeah.
We got to tweet at these people and let them know they've won Star Trek Discovery Pod awards for this week.
We've got a backlog of awards to hand out.
All right. Who wants to let the listener know who our actor MVP is?
I'll go.
Yeah.
I think Pike.
Hell
it's
got to
be Pike, right?
Anson Mount, a.k.a. Handsome.
I mean, it's kind of easy when you are going to be the lead on a particular episode for you to get the most drama that you get to kind of sink your teeth into. But he's fantastic week in and week out anyway, and us getting more screen time with him and him really getting to be haunted in that way and convey that, he was fantastic.
And even though he's the captain this season, he's been put – in most episodes, we see him in a supporting – role, and here he led his entire plot line. You know, we had this two plot lines going on. He was the lead of the better one, the one that got more screen time, and just killed it.
Agreed.
And as for our crew,
yeah, MVP crew,
costume design,
absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, the costumes in almost every scene were just magnificent.
Every time you're going to go to a Klingon planet and hang out with Klingons, you're going to see some really interesting costumes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these did harken back to previous Klingon styles that we've seen, but also seemed a lot more progressive, more colorful, more, you know, just layered and textured. But also, that Patagonia jacket.
I mean, it was nice.
Pike had nice,
hot,
clean
I would rock
lines.
That right now, I'm yeah, telling you.
It was great. And had we... okay, I'm going to cut that out. All we needed was Georgiou in this episode rocking whatever the hell she's going to rock because she's always dressed to the nines, too.
I was going to say, I missed her in this episode.
Yeah, Miss Tilly, too.
Yeah.
And what about our honorable mentions?
You know,
anyone got any?
Yeah, mine's going to go out to whoever plays Linus. Because I needed that bit of levity in this episode.
I think for me, for actors, I want to say Laurel.
Mary Chifo.
Mary Chifo. I just thought that for the little screen time she had, she killed it.
And she really acts really well through all of that
makeup. Yeah.
She does a great job.
Anybody else have any honorable mentions?
I also thought the editing was pretty well done. There was a lot of jumping, but I thought there was good transitions. It also felt like the editors had a lot of work to do for this episode. So hats off as someone who also has to edit things in their lives. I appreciated it.
Yeah, I feel that.
I'd say for me, as always, the visual effects. Like there's a scene where Burnham and Spock are about to get into the shuttle and there you see the shuttle bay. And I was a little annoyed because the shuttle they took was like this ordinary shuttle. But like when they first kind of show her in the bay, it's got this like black Corvette looking shuttle that was like really hot. And I was like, take that one. Take that
the fancy one. Fancy
one. Yeah. And then even the Section 31 ship, like it was just some really nice visuals. So
yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful show. Okay. I think that's all we got. Again, visit us at StarTrekPod.com. We'll be back next week to talk about the next episode of Discovery. Live long and prosper.
Magnets, bitch!